Our first guest today has one of the most recognizable last names in Genesee County. Dan Kildee began his electoral career in 1977 as the Flint Board of Education's youngest ever committee member. He was still a teenager, if I'm not mistaken. That was followed by long tenures on the Genesee County Board of Commissioners and as Genesee County Treasurer. Last November, the Democrat was elected to represent Michigan's 5th District, covering all or part of 6 counties, including the cities of Flint and Saginaw. He's the nephew of the man who held the seat for many years, Dale Kildee. Congressman, welcome to Current State.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Last week, on a visit to Saginaw, you referred to an idea you've got for what you called a Marshall Plan for American cities. Now, to compare anything to the Marshall Plan is to set expectations pretty high. How ambitious of a plan do you have in mind?
Well, I mean, obviously, the Marshall Plan threshold is pretty high. Back then, after the war, we spent the equivalent of 5% of our GDP at rebuilding post-war Europe. Nothing approaching that is likely, but something that is on a scale that gets us rebuilding these, you know, post-industrial cities or cities that have had, you know, significant population loss as a result of the transition from the old economy to the new one is really important. So it's not every city that needs this sort of treatment, but there are 40 or 50 cities in America that will not benefit to the extent that they should from the next period of economic recovery. These are cities that would likely be left behind unless we have, you know, a significant and I think really robust effort to rebuild the infrastructure, to retool for the next economy, to educate and train the workforce for the next economy. Otherwise, what we'll see is a repeat of the 1990s when, during a period of great economic expansion, many cities actually saw themselves moving in the other direction.
And how many cities are there in your district that you think would benefit from a plan like this?
Well, one of the things to frame is that it's the cities that need significant reinvestment, but it's the regions that are at risk, and it's the metropolitan areas in those regions of Michigan and other states that will benefit. So I say that only to make the point that while the conditions in these cities are what's holding us back, it's not just holding back the city, it's holding back the entire metropolitan area. Having said that, obviously what's happened in the city of Flint and in the city of Saginaw are probably pretty consistent with what we've seen in 40 or 50 other cities across the country. But, you know, other places, Bay City and the communities that surround Flint and Saginaw, and even those communities up the U.S. 23 corridor, for them, the greatest single variable affecting the extent to which this region will be able to grow and prosper in the next period of economic growth will be the position of those cities, the extent to which those cities are either contributing to the success of the region or, as they stand right now, continuing to hold us back.
And what's in your head with regard to this plan? How detailed has your thinking got here?
Well, this is something that I have been working in different ways on for over a decade, you know, since I started the land bank back in 2002 in Flint, the first one of its kind. Of course, there are now over 100 of them across the country. But also my work on the State Land Use Leadership Council back in 2003. So this has been, you know, really the project of my focus for the last decade or so. So to me, it's pretty intuitive. What I need to do is, you know, is to persuade the administration, and I think that's a fairly easy sell, but also other members of Congress, that this is an important set of investments. So what it would mean, it starts with some pretty fundamentals, cleaning up the wake, the blight and abandonment that's left in the wake of 20 or 30 or 40 years of decline. And what does that mean? It means demolishing abandoned structures, cleaning up empty lots, doing the basics so that we at least can create a platform for new investment and new development that, you know, is viable. And to me, that's step one. Get more of these vacant and abandoned, obsolete structures that could not be rehabilitated even under the best of circumstances. Get them off the landscape and let's start with some fresh soil in these places.
And arguably, a lot of cities that are not as hard hit as Flint contend with that. We contend with that here in Lansing.
For sure, to one extent or another. For example, in Lansing and Ingham County, you've got a very creative county treasurer in Eric Schertzing, who has done the kinds of things that communities that have not been so hard hit should be doing to prevent contagious blight from taking neighborhoods, or in some cases whole communities, down this cycle of decline. It's a shame that these systems hadn't been in place for 20 or 30 years in places like Flint and Saginaw, but it's important that the tools that we're talking about not only would benefit cities that have significant challenge, but also would help places like Lansing that have been challenged from going down the cycle of decline that places like Flint and Youngstown, Ohio, and other places across the country have experienced.
But this is new investment, I assume. This is money that's currently not being assigned to this cause. How much money would your Marshall Plan need?
Well, it's a significant sum. And in one case, what we've found is that there are dollars that are currently available that are sort of a mismatch for the needs of these communities. So there's a program that was a part of the TARP program, believe it or not. It's called the Hardest Hit Funds. And these dollars were distributed to 18 states, Michigan included, to help communities deal with the aftermath of the mortgage foreclosure crisis.
Okay.
It does not currently allow those dollars to be used for demolition. So the first step that I'm looking at is to simply match the needs with the money that's already available by changing that program so that places like Flint and Saginaw and other communities could use the hardest hit funds, which is, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that are currently unspent, to deal with their demolition needs. That's a simple fix that would not require the federal government making any additional investment. It's money that's already out there.
Do you have an overall figure in your head? You've been at this for quite a while. This as you say, this kind of approach to cities and revitalization. I mean, on the federal level, is there a dollar figure that you're kicking around?
No, there really isn't. And here's the thing. This is less about how much money we spend, but how wisely we spend it. Like, I'll give you an example. Currently, we spend hundreds of millions of dollars in Michigan with federal money for transportation. The same for housing. The focus of our thinking is to target those resources so that we're not inadvertently encouraging the relocation of wealth and economic activity from our urban core into some other place. We've got a history in Michigan, just like many other states, where we've had actually net population loss, we have still continued to grow the size and reach of local government and local government infrastructure by seeing continued sprawl and expansion of the footprint of government. That has been fueled largely by the way the federal government invests in communities. My view would be I think we will need additional money. I don't know what the number is. There are some specific numbers I know about the city of Flint. We need additional money for sure, but we should start by not using the federal resources that are available to replace or replicate existing infrastructure that is already built in our great cities that are now being left behind. In other words, why replace something that we've already built when we could simply reinvest in fixing that first?
So skeptics who might point out that Flint has lost half its population in the past 60 years, they would assume that there is a lot less need for services, but you're saying the more industrialized a city has been, the less that argument really holds weight.
Right. And the truth is, there's two problems with, and I hear that assumption all the time. You're correct to point it out. There are, you know, two pretty significant flaws in the thinking. Number one is that a city that has lost population demands less services. The truth of the matter is, it's precisely the opposite. Cities that have had significant population loss see their crime rates go up. Cities that have had significant population loss actually have more fires, for example. A big responsibility of local government is funding a fire department. When you have abandonment, you have an abandoned house is 10 times more likely to burn. So there's the notion that when a city is being hollowed out, that you can cut the budget in half, just isn't true. The other sort of fallacy, and I pointed this out at the top of the interview, is that these cities, their problems are sort of unto themselves. And what we found, and this is proven, you know, not only across the country but across the globe, is that the conditions in cities, taking my hometown of Flint as the best example, the conditions in the city of Flint, the challenges that it faces, are the single biggest factor holding back the metropolitan area of 500,000 people. And so the notion that these cities and reinvesting in these cities would only benefit those people who live there has been proven to be false. The vibrancy, the strength of that community would have obvious positive benefits for the entire metropolitan area. Conversely, its weakness holds us all back.
We're talking with U.S. Congressman Dan Kildee of Flint. In a story last week by current state contributor Angela Whitrock, you refer to reducing the country's projected $20 trillion deficit responsibly, quote, responsibly, unquote. In broad terms, what does it mean to reduce our deficit responsibly?
Well, it means taking a balanced approach, which is what many here are talking about, but very few want to put into specifics. A balanced approach means spending cuts where it makes sense, which means where the problem exists. Where does the problem exist? It exists in health care. The fact that our federal deficit continues to grow is largely attributable to the fact that we are the biggest purchaser of health care in the marketplace through Medicare and Medicaid, and health care costs are exploding at a time when more and more people are becoming eligible. So starting with cuts where it makes sense, or reducing the cost curve on health care where it makes sense, not going over and using the debt crisis as a battering ram to achieve ideological goals of reducing the safety net programs, which is what's happening now. The cuts are not being projected in the area where the costs are growing. What we're deciding to do, and I'm not a part of this, but what lots of people in Congress are doing, rather than taking on the source of the problem, let's cut something that we don't like in the first place, and that's a lot of the safety net programs that many people here in Congress were never for in the first place. To me, what that does is obfuscates the real problem and actually exacerbates the problems that communities are dealing with by reducing the safety net that's a result. The other two parts of this, raising revenue. The economy, our challenges are not occurring because the wealthiest Americans don't have enough money to spend. There's more capital on the bench, on the sidelines, than we've had in the history of our country.
Okay. Look, I tell you, we're running out of time. There's a quick question or two I'd still like to run past you.
Sure.
Who would you like to see replace Rick Snyder?
Oh, my gosh, a Democrat. You know, somebody who, you know, who actually believes that the history of the state, which built the middle class, is valid.
Who? Who though?
You know what? The Democrats will come up with a good candidate. I don't have a name that I'm willing to offer right now.
Can I ask you about Carl Levin then? Who's on your short list to replace Senator Levin?
Same thing. First of all, nobody's going to replace Carl Levin. You know, this guy has been an icon not only in Michigan politics, but has really been the standard in the United States Senate. So, you know, there are lots of good names out there. We've heard them all. Any one of the Democrats that are being bandied about to me, you know, could do the job. They would bring a different perspective than Carl has, but I'm confident that Michigan will stay blue and we'll send a Democrat to the Senate.
And as a U of M Flint guy, I'm sure it's M go blue for
Man, what a great weekend.
Kildee, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
We'll check in with you again. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you. Congressman Dan Kildee, thank you.
Thank you very much.